This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you today, Tuesday, June 26th, for a special call-in broadcast. Thanks to all of you who attended the WBAI Fun Drive with Ralph this past Saturday at the Ethical Culture, and those who continued the discussion from the Ethical Culture Society with the 9/11 Truth Movement event on Sunday. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Maya. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and soon we'll be together again.
You know, I want to tell you, Maya, that I was introducing my talk at the Ethical Culture Society with an anecdote. I don't even know if I've told you this story, but I want our listeners to hear it. When I was with Bertrand Russell, who I met when I was 24 and he was 88, Russell had been raised by his grandfather in his 80s already, and his grandfather, Lord John, had been the Prime Minister of Great Britain during the Reform Act of 1832. He had visited Napoleon at Elba. And one of the things that Napoleon was saying to Lord John at the time, this was in 1815, was how much he missed Josephine, who he called my Bonaparte. I was without my Bonaparte at the Ethical Culture Society. I'm glad that you're with me now, Maya.
And Ralph, for the our listeners who don't understand French, could you explain the play on word?
Well, Napoleon In other words, actually, it's an Italianization, but it's my better half or my better part. That's the, and as Bertie used to say, history stops in 1815. After that, it's gossip, family gossip. But with that little anecdote, Maya, I wanted to be celebrating with our listeners that we're back together again on Taking Aim. And we're wanting to do a call-in, brothers and sisters, to be able to field some more of the questions and have more discussion, because the discussion went on, as we were very happy to see it do. And beyond the hours that we could stay either at St. Mark's Church or at the Ethical Culture. And what we were addressing was the nature of the terror state and of 9/11 itself, the relationship between 9/11 to the terror state. I want to mention, brothers and sisters, that as Maya was pointing out to me today, and Maya, you might want to say a few words about this before we start receiving calls. A very interesting thing has occurred just now. The Central Intelligence Agency has released a set of documents compiled over 30 years ago, which detail the agency's involvement for a quarter of a century in crimes including assassination, torture, covert spying on newspapers, penetration of all left-wing organizations, the use of mind-altering drugs on U.S. subjects across the U.S., and above all, the deployment of false flag operations, including, as I mentioned, assassination. What an extraordinary thing that they should be releasing this sort of documentation now. And of course, this covers up a period that ends in the 1970s, and we can be certain that it is somewhat selective. But interestingly, as I think it's important for us to discuss, amongst those documents is the detailed confirmation of how Robert Kennedy was organizing the assassination of Fidel Castro. Because even if you look at today, the current issue of Time magazine with its cover story about John F. Kennedy, and you see a reference to this David Talbot hagiography called Brothers, you have there the romanticization and of the Kennedy brothers, and Robert in particular, and interestingly enough, above all, a man named Walter Sheridan. And what's important about Walter Sheridan is, since we're talking about the terror state and 9/11, and in particular the use of covert operatives in newspapers and the penetration of organizations, is that Walter Sheridan, who was Robert Kennedy's man, specialized in suborning perjury, terrorizing witnesses, threatening them with death, and he was sent in by Robert Kennedy to destroy the investigation of Jim Garrison. That is an extraordinary reality that is now being covered up in the cover story of Time magazine. We don't need another cover-up to amplify the original cover-up with respect to the execution of John F. Kennedy by reinventing the Kennedy brothers and what the underlying politics of that assassination were. But now,
well, I'd like to give out the phone number, the WBAI call-in number. It's 212-209-2900. Again, that's 212-209-2900. And Ralph, both of us were in California, different parts of California, but in the WBAI studio, we have our wonderful engineer, Michael G. Haskin. And he, Michael G., will be fielding your phone calls, 212-209-2900. Aside from the startling revelation of the CIA involvement in death squads and torture and so forth, we had in the New York Times on Monday, June 25th, an article about how the FBI was spying on the National Lawyers Guild for decades, and not just spying, taking an active role in preventing political activity and political participation. The revelation, 400,000 pages of files on the National Lawyers Group and Guild, and this is just the New York section of the National Lawyers Guild, which is a national organization, so there are many, many hundreds of thousands of more files. The Guild was founded in New York in 1937, and in 1977, so many years ago, the lawyers in the New York City chapter of the Guild filed a lawsuit against the FBI calling for revelation of documents. This lawsuit went on until there was a settlement in 1989, and in the settlement, the documents, the original statement of the settlement, the documents were to be sealed. That means no one was to see them until 2025, when they would be turned over to the National Archives. However, the Guild donated the documents in 1997 to the Tamament Library and the Robert F. Wagner Labor Archives at New York University, and they are now being made public and studied. The surveillance spanned the administrations of seven presidents, and much as the revelations of the CIA span presidents, Democrat, Republicans, these things go on. Ralph?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when you say these things go on, James Schlesinger was a Central Intelligence Agency director who in 1973 ordered for the exposure of some of these operations. Now, that actually had to do with internecine maneuvering within the agency and the maneuvering for securing hegemony over the control of intelligence. It's not unlike what we see happening now with Brzezinski and others concerned about the particular agenda of an attack on Iran at a moment when they think it's going to undermine imperial control by arousing a massive mobilization of the populations of the Middle East and within the United States itself. These guys, Brzezinski, after all, is the person who was the first architect of the call for a new Pearl Harbor as a catalytic catastrophic consequence that would create a public mindset of acquiescence.
And that's... Brzezinski is the master of the grand chessboard, the plan for the control of Afghanistan, then, so that the oil companies could build a pipeline through Afghanistan to deal with Central Asian oil, and the breakup of the Soviet Union.
All of that, and it's interesting that same call for a new Pearl Harbor that the Brzezinski articulated in the Grand Chessboard, Maya, was taken up in the document, the Project for the New American Century. But it's interesting to note who it is that actually put forward that call for the document. It was Rabbi Duff Zakheim, the controller for the Pentagon, who presided over the disappearance of $7.2 trillion in Pentagon funds without a paper trail. And the other thing that's, I think, very significant about this, and I was discussing that at the WBAI fundraiser at the Ethical Culture Society and at St. Mark's, Dov Zakheim, who is very closely linked to the Likud and to the Zionist state, as he is to a whole wing of the ruling class, he ran a company called Systemics, and that particular company had an electronic project which was implemented widely and deployed by the Pentagon, i.e. the remote control by computer of Boeing 757 and 767 and other aircraft, overriding pilot command, running these craft and maneuvering them from the ground. That technology provided by the company of Dov Zakheim. The elephant in the closet, which was the focus of my discussion in this recent fundraiser, has to do with the role of the central role of the Israeli state and the Mossad and the unfolding of that inside job, that treason at the top, that is September 11th, 2001. Brothers and sisters, these two-hour presentations with the hour and a half each of very dynamic discussion will be the topic of premiums, the subject of premiums, which we will be offering in the future for WBAI.
And it's the near future, Ralph. In July, middle of July, there will be the WBAI Summer Fund Drive. So if you weren't able to attend the Ethical Culture Fundraiser or be at St. Mark's Church this past Sunday, or if you were there and you want a video of the event, they will be available as Taking Aim premiums for our contributions for WBAI to keep this incredible station on the air. Again, the telephone number is 212-209-2900. Neither of us can see the board, so we're depending on Michael G. Okay, Michael.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, is this Maya? Maya?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, Ralph.
So, thank you.
Yeah, I've listened to you for more than 2 years now, and I never called, but I decided to call today.
I'm so happy you called today.
Yeah,
thank
I'm sorry
you.
I couldn't make it at the Ethical Culture Society, you know?
Not
but,
to worry. There will be more events for WBAI
okay.
in the future. But I'm very glad
I'm actually calling you. I'm calling you from Brooklyn, New York. Okay.
Great. Do you have a question?
Yes. I wanted to say I appreciate everything you've been saying so far, and I really don't want to alarm you, but you know, I would love to have you around for 200 years. But you know, sometimes people don't take kindly to the messenger. You know what it is? Sometimes
of course
they don't
we
like to hear the
that.
Truth.
But let me say this to you, my brother. We all have our war stories to tell. I've been in prison and jail over 13 times. Maya has equivalent experiences, and many of us who are active over the many years can give similar accounts of, you know, when you lead an activist life, that comes with the territory.
Okay.
But you can't sort of look over your shoulder at what the authorities may or may not.
Yeah, because you know what happened to Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. I mean, you know the story. But anyway, this is my final statement I wanted to make to you.
Yes.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, concerning the 9/11 event, right?
Yes.
I wish you would use a six-letter word. That six-letter word is the word staged, S-T-A-G-E-D. It was a staged event. I don't need to tell you who the players are. I think up to now we all know who the players are. But I wish you would use our stage, because that's all it was. It was a staged event, and people who don't believe that this event was staged, they need to move to another planet.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, since we were first, I was doing an interview with our old brother and comrade Elambe Brath of Africa Kaleidoscope and WBAI and the head of the Patrice Lumumba Association, a coalition, excuse me, going back to right after the World Trade Center was attacked. And for 2 hours, Elambe and I discussed this staged operation, this inside job, as you so to describe it so well. And after all, brother, anybody who looked at the evidence pertaining to the dry run in 1993, which I had done when I wrote an article called Who Bombed the World, or the U.S. World Trade Center, 93, growing evidence points to the role of FBI operatives. There you had, in the established press, the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, the Dallas Morning News, Impact, and the press in London and so on, the documentation of the critical role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in organizing that event and sending in an operative to stage it. But in particular, the person who arranged the rider rental van, who arranged the safe house, and by the way, the people renting the rider rental van were all FBI operatives. This person was Guzi Hadass, an operative of the Mossad. Not only that, but the communique on the television, the Israeli intelligence communications network, Matara, with the signature of an operative named Anne, established that the Israelis had complete and detailed knowledge of the planned bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. And this information was published in the London periodical Impact, and it was confirmed in the International Herald Tribune. The London Times confirmed that Israeli intelligence had detailed information about the World Trade Center bombing, and Guzi Hadass, as it was described at the time in the same press, was a long-established Mossad operative. The chapter and verse of the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993 left no ambiguity in our minds, of course, about the replication of these events with the same modus operandi in the year 2001. So, as you say, anybody who lives on this planet, who can read the established press, and who can detect and discern that all of the people who are being blamed for these things, such as Mohammed Atta and al-Sheikhi and the so-called terrorist Arab hijackers, they're people who are working out of U.S. military installations, as reported in Newsweek and the Washington Post and Knight Ridder newspapers and so on. Yes, it's as clear can be. It's what the Jesuits call invincible ignorance. Everybody knows who has any kind of position in authority, and certainly that Millionaires Club in Congress all know, but they choose not to know. Brother, I appreciate the call, and Michael, if there are other callers, we'll be glad to take those calls now, or we can go on with some particular information along these lines. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, please. You're on the air. This is WBAI Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Good talking to you, brother. Tell me what's on your mind.
About 2 months ago, you had a program regarding with the upcoming attack on Iran.
Yes.
And one of the things that was discussed was that there would be a false flag operation here in the United States, specifically around the Philadelphia area, some kind of attack there with the gas refineries, the oil refineries, which,
yes, that's correct.
That attack occurs, that would then be used as a justification for the war in Iran. And when you mentioned this a few months ago, I believe you said it would be taking a place during a sporting event.
Let me just clarify that for you. We were not stating it would take place. We were stating that what we were reporting from the mainstream press. It was in The Guardian in London, and it was in The New Statesman, I believe, in Dan Flesch's.
Can I interrupt?
Yes, of course.
The gas refinery attack next to a sports stadium in New Jersey is a scenario that was described in Time magazine and is one of the scenarios of a book, I forget the author, who is a so-called national security expert.
Okay.
And he has recently published a book. He's published others, and he's a famous security expert. His point is that the infrastructure of the United States is not adequately guarded.
Okay.
And this was one of his scenarios. What we discussed in terms of Iran and the impending attack on Iran is that the way to precipitate American citizen interest in having an attack is to have a false flag operation.
Correct.
For instance, people, they aroused great deal of fear and terror in order to attack Afghanistan and Iraq. And this was done with the attack on the 9/11 and the death of thousands of people. And the consequence of the administration saying there is a war on terror.
Correct.
The same sort of scenario has been used over and over throughout history, such as the Spanish-American War with the attack on the Maine that was in Havana Harbor, and on. We've discussed this in program after program. But we never said that there was going to be a specific attack in Philadelphia. This was a scenario that comes out of a general scenario that comes out of one of these so-called.
I know, Maya, but I think that what you say is, of course, quite accurate. But these scenarios that are launched in the press are not just randomly put there. And the theme was picked up by Dan Plesch in the New Statesman, U.S. Ready to Attack Iran. And it was amplified by Zbigniew Brzezinski in his testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that we have cited, in which he said, amongst other things, that the three words that represent the biggest lie today are war on terror.
That is correct.
And to a shocked group of senators, Brzezinski continued to say, the reckless endangerment of the U.S. interests is being pursued by this administration, and they are capable, and it is evident that they will attempt to stage an attack within the United States and to blame this on Iran in order to provide themselves with the pretext for waging a war. And to amplify that, he actually disclosed the content of a secret memorandum concerning the meeting between Prime Minister Blair and President George Bush just prior to the attack on Iraq, when the two heads of state were discussing how they didn't have a credible basis for selling to the public their attack on Iraq, and therefore they would have to, quote, stage a spectacular event. And Brzezinski quoted that, really breaking ranks. And so when you see this article that Maya is citing and this description in great particularity about the accessibility and vulnerability of gas and petroleum infrastructure in the ports and in proximity to population centers, anticipating and describing in detail how toxic gases would pervade the automobiles in gridlock and tunnels and on highways, asphyxiating and poisoning the people therein, and then go on to affect the New York Mets and Philadelphia Phillies as they were playing a baseball game in Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. Those are not just random speculative articles that occur. They are part of the drumbeat of terrorizing the population and of even preparing for operations on the drawing board. And that's what Dan Plesch was citing in the New Statesman article, U.S. Ready to Attack Iran. And that's what William Arkin was citing in his long series in the Washington Post and Los Angeles Times about the pending and prepared attacks on Iran, including with tactical nuclear weapons, under what he calls Tirant. Maya, you recall what Tirant? I don't have the document in front of me, but something about research and reconnaissance for a prepared attack on Iran. It's not just a speculative. It's an operational program.
That's right. There have been war games staged, and it's gone beyond war games by bringing the aircraft carriers and the battleships into the vicinity so that they can attack Iran, you know, loading up with the military, and also building the bases throughout the Gulf states so that they can have strategic headquarters. And there's even discussion with Turkey, because they've always wanted to use the U.S. bases in Turkey as staging grounds for these military attacks. So they have done a lot of the preparation. They've done the preparatory war games. They do field operations. And, Ralph, you came across major articles about U.S.-Israeli joint operations.
Well, this is exactly what is the reason for this current charade in Gaza, because as I was documenting in my report back after we came back from a month in the West Bank and in Jordan and Kuwait, what was happening in Gaza with the poison gas and the automatic weapons and these new extraordinary, what can I call them, poison ray gun weaponry that has been used throughout the West Bank, but throughout Gaza, and the massive armament of that CIA operative Dalan by Israel, Egypt, and the United States, all of this preparatory to staging an attack on all of the civilian leadership of Hamas, and when the Hamas fighters with the backing of the population overwhelmed this Palestinian Authority torture operation of Dalan in Gaza, what happened? The U.S. and the military, as reported in the London Times and the Middle East Times and Agence France-Presse and Haaretz, began several week-long joint exercises with massive U.S. military and Israeli Air Force and U.S. Air Force throughout southern Israel and the Negev Desert, simulating bombings of targets on the ground that are preparatory to attacks on Iran. And they were, as the Agence France-Presse report stated, the exercises are taking place with respect to the specific discussions between Israel and the United States for military action against Iran, an operation that has been planned for 2 years. And Washington, Israel, and Western countries, its states, are preparing for such an assault. This is amplified in the Middle Eastern Times, and immediately thereafter, in the most recent days, Netanyahu and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert came to the United States to meet with Bush and with the national security people with respect to this pending attack on Iran. I should mention, by the way,
Ralph, that before you do that, I think it's time to break for a station identification for let our listeners know more about WBAI. Michael?
Michael Franch from Spearhead saying, whoop, whoop, we come and never pre-recorded, live and direct, it's just listener supported on WBAI.
Morish.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, and we're continuing today our Taking Aim call-in program, and Michael has informed us that we have more listeners on the air.
Let's have the calls.
Hello?
Yes,
Ralph. Hello, you're on the air with WBAI. Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen of Taking Aim.
Oh, thank you. What a privilege.
Thank you, brother.
I was wondering if you could talk about if there is any significance in terms of Blair now trying to incorporate himself into this quartet peace process.
Into which project, I'm sorry?
I was reading an article on Google today. It was by a political science professor from the University of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. Michael Unhertz, and Ashira Bukaki, and they were talking about Blair becoming incorporated into the quartet peace process.
Well, of course, with respect to
the Zionist state and the Palestinians.
That has to do with assigning some representative of the United States and Britain in regard to making a plan in the Arab East for the effective subjugation of the Palestinian population under the Palestine Authority, which is run by the CIA and is essentially a policing operation for the U.S. and for the Zionists. they need a front man. They were thinking Kissinger, they were thinking Bill Clinton, and they're thinking Tony Blair. But, you know, what name is attached to the long-standing designs is not so much the question. Let me give you a concrete example of what I mean. When I mentioned that Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is there in Washington with Netanyahu with reference to pending attacks on Iran, bear in mind that Ehud Olmert is the Prime Minister at the time that the U.S. and Israeli plans for destroying all Lebanon in this recent war unfolded, when they made a million refugees out of a population of 3.5 million people, and they devastated the entire south of Lebanon with the intention that they would go from there on to Syria. Well, Ehud Olmert has another feather in his cap. When the Odigo Moving Van Company was called out for its military and Mossad operatives, who, it was acknowledged in the Israeli press and the American press, all had advanced knowledge of the attack on the World Trade Center. 2 weeks to 2 hours in advanced knowledge, that's why none of them were in the Trade Center. But they were all preparing filming of the World Trade Center for hours prior to its collapse. They had box cutters in their van. Another section of the Odigo Moving Company van, which is a cover for the Mossad, was in the proximity of the Sears Tower in Chicago with explosives and operational plans in relation to that. It's Ehud Olmert, who was then the mayor of Tel Aviv, who was deployed to take charge of these people as they were returned to Israel and to Herzliya, where the Mossad is based. They all had military and Mossad associations. So 9/11, which embraces Netanyahu and embraces Olmert, and a good deal of that documentation I was deploying in these recent talks in New York, are now the people in Washington consulting with U.S. authorities in relation to a pending attack on Iran. So I think it's clear here that when they talk about a person like Tony Blair as the point man for what you call the quartet, that has absolutely nothing to do with anything called peace. It has everything to do with both pacification and with lining up Egypt, Israel, and the police operation for them conducted by the Palestine Authority in service of the new dispensation following on the pending attacks on Iran.
I see.
Next call, please, Michael.
I had heard something, I don't know enough, I was wondering if you do, that a lot of the congressmen and senators had put something called a put option on the airline stocks prior to 9/11. Apparently, the trading of put options on the airline stocks was phenomenally high, abnormally high, prior to 9/11.
That's absolutely correct. What are called the puts and calls, which are a gambling on the fall of stock after a catastrophic event, and they are betting on its fall, and would make a fortune by purchasing it at a predicted lower rate, and thereby gaining the difference between the rate at the time that they make that purchase and the drop that would occur. They cover the spread. Let me give you a particular about that. The Carlyle Group is the $14 billion company of the Bushes, and it's a who's who of the Bush administration, but not only that, with Ron Brown and a number of leading Democrats as well, that is deeply connected to the BCCI and the Saudi royals and their funding operations and their bank operations. But one of the principal people on the Carlyle Group was a man named Fred Malik, who was a campaign manager for Bush Sr., and he ran the Bush-Quayle presidential campaign, and he was a close associate of Ron Brown, the leading Democratic fund coordinator, whose law offices, those of Ron Brown, coordinated the financing for Dan Quayle, just to give you the picture. Malik purchased the Texas Rangers. He put George W. Bush in charge, as they were sheep-dipping Bush to give him some kind of credibility. Malik was the chairperson of Thayer Capital Partners, which is a Washington-based merchant bank that acquires the operating companies of a wide array of corporate conglomerates. It's through Thayer Capital that Malik led the 1995 acquisition of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. It was at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel that the Carlyle Group directors, including Bush Sr. and all of the directors, met on the morning of September 11th to watch television. They weren't watching Howdy Doody. Malik and Thayer Capital acquired Northwest Isle Airlines, of which he was the director, president, and vice chairman, a major figure in the airline industry. His desk was to determine the division of flight routes and the scheduling of air flights, and in particular, those flights that were to be altered, where to send those airplanes. Got the picture? Now what about the puts and calls and the implications of the puts and calls on airline stocks of United and American Airlines that immediately preceded the attacks of September 11th? Malik, through Thayer Capital, acquired not just the Ritz-Carlton, but C.B. Richard Ellis, i.e. Coldwell Banker, the largest real estate services company commanding vast sectors of commercial and residential real estate. Just the hotel holdings alone were over $2 billion in the 1990s. They've increased dramatically since. But Thayer Capital and Malik were the key players in automatic data processing that is wired into the NSA and the supercomputer control over financial speculation and financial transactions in the United States. He also sits on the board along with the FPL group Florida Power and Light, which is the major donor to Governor Jeb Bush. But he's president of Marriott Hotels, controlling $3 billion in that enterprise alone, key advisor to four presidents for two decades, director of the Republican Convention for Bush Sr., director of the Economic Summit of the Industrialized Nations with the support of the Democrats. And this is the figure who was associated with Bioport and Admiral William Crow that was working with who? Alex Brown and Bankers Trust. They took over Bankers Trust. That is the firm that executed the puts and calls prior to September 11th. That is the firm that organized the positions and the stocks of American Airlines and United Airlines and Boeing in brokerage houses and reinsurance companies, including companies that they controlled, IA, AXA Insurance, Swiss Re, and Uni Re. As Lois Batuello, who is specialty his research into these particular financial companies, put it, that shows foreknowledge. You bet it does. These trades that were hubbed by Alex Brown under the oversight of Fred Malik and Carlyle, with Deutsche Bank acquisition of Bankers Trust, and the persons heading the Alex Brown unit, which is Deutsche Brown's trading arm, they're the people who organize the puts and calls. And the former director of enforcement for the SEC, Richard Walker, was given a particular staff position at Deutsche Bank for the facilitation of these operations. Einuz Hartman is the Israeli firm which was involved with Deutsche Bank and Bankers Trust in these puts and calls ventures. So what we're looking here is the conjunction of Carlyle Group, the Zionists and the Mossad, the Israel Tech Acquisition Corporation, and the reinsurance companies that I mentioned. That is the complex with Deutsche Bank and the Carlyle Group that is are the operating figures for the puts and calls. And we're looking here, in my judgment, at the basic architecture of the preparing and planning of the attacks of September 11th, 2001.
Ralph, before we go on to our next question and caller, a slight clarification. Odigo is the instant messaging company, and as you mentioned, the Odigo employees had a heads up about the events of 9/11.
Right, and but they're also linked to the Urban...
The moving company is the Urban... I think it's Urban Systems Moving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Michael, our next caller, please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on the air, WBAI, New York. This is Maya Shonan, Ralph Shonan of Taking Aim.
Yes. Pleasure to be speaking with both of you. Maya, I wish you can travel with to New York with Ralph sometime.
Oh, yes. I look forward to that day, too.
Okay. I have a two-part question. The first part is, as I recently read in the paper about the Air Force being revealed that the Air Force working on this bomb that would make soldiers, enemy soldiers, turn into homosexual. They call it the gay bomb, as well as other bombs they were developing. Do you think, because they said they backed away from it, do you think they backed away because they were exposed, or, you know, what is their reason? And the part two of the question is, back in the late 70s and early 80s, there was a Carter Brzezinski memorandum about Grenada and its effect on the African-American population. Can you explain to the audience about that?
Well, let me say, first of all, that I'm not familiar with the particular Air Force plan to impact soldiers and to induce them to be gay.
I don't think you could.
My feelings about that are that, to induce people to be gay is hardly something that serves the U.S. In any particular fashion. There certainly are all kinds of mind-altering drugs, and much of the vaccination that's imposed upon soldiers and the population at large has tremendous neurological effects on the 200,000 Gulf War veterans who are able to testify to that. And both with mind-altering drugs and with the weaponization of biological agents, both the Pentagon and the U.S. rulers have prepared for enormous assaults upon the population. We've done a six-part series.
Part creating the next pandemic.
Yes. So you're talking about something which is certainly critically important. I mean, there's a book that we've often cited by the professor of public health policy at Rutgers University, Leonard Cole, called Clouds of Secrecy, which documents that for something like 40 years, the Pentagon was releasing trillions of bacilli in the subway system of New York, the school systems of Minneapolis and St. Louis. Excuse me, Maya, go ahead.
The bacilli in New York and in San Francisco, there was a marked increase in spinal meningitis in the hospitals after the release of various bacilli, and there was experimentation taking place out of Lawrence Livermore. So this goes on, and this has been documented throughout history, but of any specific bomb that would affect the social interaction of people of this, we haven't heard anything, and I don't think that that's the aim of the U.S. military. But there was a second part to your question, and I think I forgot it. Ralph, do you remember the second part?
No, I'm sorry. Please repeat it, brother.
No, we had to move on. Sorry about that. We'll take the next call.
Okay. You're on the air, WBAI New York, with Ralph Shulman and Maya Schoen of Taking Aim.
Hi, Maya. Yes,
hi.
Maya. I've never called before. This is my first time.
Well, we rarely have call-ins. We enjoy them, and we know our listeners also in call. So we're glad that you had the opportunity to reach us.
Yeah, I'm glad that I reached you also. You know, I'd like to say that everything that has happened, instances that have happened, you know, are true. Everything that they're writing or what's being written about all these incidents, like John F. Kennedy wanted to assassinate someone else, or just statements about people that are doing the right thing and that are righteous in this world, rumors being told about them so that they can take them out. You know, right now there's a big conspiracy, which I feel, spraying all over the world. All on top, the Air Force is spraying chemicals all over us, like they've done chemicals in the subways, they've done chemicals here, they've tested people. The CIA sells drugs. I mean, what are we doing about this? You know,
that's a very good question, Ralph. They're very good questions. Let's take the last point you make first, brother. The heroin and cocaine and opium traffic has long been a staple of imperialism. The British, for example, introduced opium into China through Hong Kong. It was a huge money-making operation, but it was a specific attempt to demobilize and demoralize the Chinese population at large. The whole opium traffic was a British operation. And interestingly enough, since you mentioned the assassination of Kennedy, one of the CIA operatives who was based in New Orleans and a target of Jim Garrison was associated with something called Permindex, or Permanent Industrial Expositions, and he was also running something called the World Trade Mart out of New Orleans. One of the things that this particular nexus of operations was organizing was indeed heroin distribution centers for the Central Intelligence Agency. And this whole association with the U.S. ruling class, with corporate America, and in particular with the military, with drug traffic, has been, of course, documented by people like Alfred McCoy, The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia, and his supplementary book, The Politics of Heroin. In the location in Florida, Venice, Florida, where this little Piper Cub and Cessna airline company, Huffman Aviation, was based, which is supposedly where Mohammed Atta and Al-Ghamdi were being trained, as it were. Huffman Aviation is, in fact, a heroin smuggling air company for the CIA. It was publicly exposed as such. The DEA and other feds actually caught them at it as well, and after they were publicly exposed as well for their heroin trafficking, the governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, and Secretary of State of Florida, Katherine Harris, publicly associated themselves and became sponsors of Huffman Aviation, of Arnie Krudhoff and Rudy Decker. What's interesting about this is that in Venice, Florida, which is a small little place, you have an enormous establishment belonging to Jackson Stevens, and that establishment is the local National Security Agency Nexus and Mansion. What's interesting about the multi-billionaire Jackson Stevens is that he is the principal funder of George Bush Sr. and the principal funder of William Clinton, and through his presence in Little Rock, Arkansas, which is his base, he was running the drug smuggling operations out of Mena, Arkansas, under the governorship of Bill Clinton. There are many, many ramifications of this, but let me just put it to you like this. Profits now from cocaine and heroin are close to $1 trillion a year. There isn't a bank in the United States, notably in Florida and New Jersey, that isn't processing that money. You can't any longer distinguish it from majority ownership of General Dynamics or General Electric, for that matter, because it's integrated within finance capital. All banks in New York, New Jersey, and Florida and beyond are processing these funds. That's part of the criminalization of the ruling class. Drugs are a central motif, and they're also used, as we know, politically. Namely, they are shunted into the inner cities, where they are deployed amongst ghetto youth, amongst black and Hispanic youth, the most exploited sectors of the ruling class. The big profits are made by the people who run this, like the Drug Enforcement Agency and the corporations and the politicians and the banks that are behind it. The youngsters who are scrambling and hustling to make a dollar and to survive are then criminalized and targeted in this war against black America. We have 2.3 million black and minority prison population in the United States. It makes black youth an endangered species in this country. It's intimately related to the drug traffic, but it's intimately related to the war on black America, and indeed the class war being waged against the people of our country. this is a kind of concentration, this drug traffic in relation to intelligence. It was central to the Iran-Contra operation. And one last point about this, brother, that I think brings it home very clearly. Mohammed Atta was rooming and having his accommodation with a man named Charlie Voss of Huffman Aviation. Who's Charlie Voss? A CIA gunrunner for the Contras into Nicaragua, running C-130s, carrying guns in and running cocaine out. That, I think, tells us what is involved with BCCI, Jackson Stevens, the Carlyle Group, George Bush, the war on the population of the United States, the particular class war that is waged against our working people, and above all, that war of destruction that's waged against black America. Drugs and repression, architecture of a fascist state, and the events of 9/11 themselves all come together. If you want to connect the dots, they connect very easily and dramatically around this nexus of drugs, intelligence, banking, and the financing of the political process of this country.
And on that note, we end our call-in program today, this edition of Taking Aim. Taking Aim will resume its regular programming next week and look forward for the summer WBAI fund drive. So look forward for the Ethical Culture presentation by the Ethical Culture Society, the presentation Ralph made recently. That'll be our WBAI premium for the summer fund drive, as well as the continuation of that discussion that took place at St. Mark's Church for the New York 9/11 Truth Movement, which meets every Sunday at St. Mark's Church.
And let me make one last point about this, Maya, because I hope you will contact both our website and the website of New York 9/11 Truth, because we are preparing a drive for signatures for getting a commission established for an independent inquiry with subpoena power to have the equivalent of the Bertrand Russell Tribunal on U.S. War Crimes in Vietnam around the question of 9/11, galvanizing opinion across this country and the world with a concentration of evidence that will expose the nature of this crime against our people and the populations of the world at large.
That is ny911truth.org. And once again, the Taking Aim website is www.takingaimradio.com.
And continue to support Free Speech Radio, brothers and sisters, and WBAI. Without our Free Speech WBAI, we couldn't be giving you this information, and we couldn't come together to prepare the fight back.
We'll be with you next week.
Yeah.